Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and this is episode 61 of Art for Your Ear. And as usual, I'm happy to say this episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. You can visit them at saatchiart.com. Today we are calling an artist in Brooklyn. Emily Barletta is a very talented woman with an incredible story that I really, really want to share. She was diagnosed with a rare spinal disease when she was in her early teens and was in a huge amount of pain for years, both because of her back and because of the terrible bullying that she experienced. I want Emily to tell you the full story, but I will let it slip that yes, she used art to push herself through to the other side. She is incredibly inspiring, just like her work. If you're a teenager or you have a teenager, I think this is a really important episode. So on that note, I'm going to stop talking and start dialing instead. Here we go. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Danielle.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. We have not talked in 2.5 years. Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy. I can't believe that book signing was that long ago.
I know. It is so weird. I think because with Facebook and stuff, you know, you just keep seeing people and you don't actually talk, but you know what's going on in their life. And then all of a sudden you're like, wow, that was 2.5 years ago.
That's
weird.
Very true.
But it was so neat to meet you in person because I'd written about you a few times, I think, before. And then, of course, you were in Creative Block. And then it was so cool to actually meet you in person and actually have a chance to, because we actually got a little bit of time by ourselves, which was kind of crazy on that night.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
It was. And I was thinking, oh yeah, I know lots about Emily. But then when I was sort of writing questions to ask her, I was like, I don't know a lot about Emily. So I'm going to ask you and record it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
So I do know that you went to art school, but I don't remember where. And I kind of want to go right back and just talk about well, I mean, all of your work now is embroidery and crochet and fiber arts. And so did you do that kind of stuff as a kid, or did you draw, or what were you like?
Well, I was a weird kid, and like I feel like a lot of artists.
Yeah.
That's like the story. I was a really weird kid, and I was really into crafts and like making anything with my hands, but not like necessarily in an art way, like I learned to do cross stitch when I was really young, and a neighbor's mom taught me to crochet blankets, and I did beading, and it was like basically anything you could humanly do that was a craft. I spent hours doing that and teaching myself and like developing my skill, and it was always like, what's the next crazy stitch I can learn that is really difficult? And then I would do that. So.
Oh my gosh, I guess you took the right path.
Yeah.
I was like that too. I had this book. It was these little things called stumpkins, and they were like little people made out of old nylons. And
with like old people faces, like those.
Well,
ones?
You could do old people. Mine, these ones were cute. I don't know. It was just this random book called Stumpkin. Something my dad got it at a craft store or something. And you would stuff them with fiberfill, and then their eyes were beads. You could make them look old, but I never did. And I was obsessed. So I made like a Santa one, and an Easter Bunny one, and a graduation one, and yeah. So I understand the loving of the crafts.
Yeah.
And so what happened, like, did you just know that you were going to go to art school then? Was that just destiny?
No.
Oh.
Where does that story start? It's like another story, but, you know, high school is, like, awful for me.
Yeah.
And I found the art room, I think, when I was, like, in 10th grade in high school. And, it was, like, a really great place to go that, you know, like, was safe, and my art teacher let me go anytime I wanted. I basically had a free pass, so, like, instead of study hall, I'd go to the art room. Instead of lunch, I'd go eat lunch in the art room, and that's basically when it all kind of, like, fell into place, I guess, and I started painting around that time. So I actually wanted to go to art school to become an illustrator. That was, like, my big dream, and I found some interview in a local magazine of me in high school, and I was like 16 and I said, I'm going to be a children's book illustrator, and like was really confident about what I was going to do, which of course did not end up being anything like what I was going to do. So that was my plan.
Wow. And how and when did that plan change?
Well, I would say freshman year, I went to the Maryland Institute College of Art in Baltimore, and I took illustration as my elective, that your free class, and I was horrible at it. It was like the worst matched thing you could imagine. I don't take direction well, and every class was like, here, illustrate this, and it was just horrible every time. So then for the second semester, I took Fibers, which I didn't even like know what Fibers was, or that Fibers was a thing you could major in. And I'd never heard of it. And then I was immediately clear, like, oh, this is where I'm supposed to be. And I already knew how to do everything that they were teaching us in terms of technique anyway.
Right. Because of your childhood. And so when the illustration thing, when you realized like, did it kind of crush you because that had been your plan? Or were you able to just sort of adapt because you, well, I mean, in that moment before you found Fibers and understood what it was, were you thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do now?
I don't know if I was thinking that. There was more than one thing I feel like I got crushed on first semester, and they all kind of went together. Like, I also had this idea of myself being a painter and taking painting class because everyone had to. It was like immediately obvious that I wasn't a painter, and that like, and I mean, like, maybe that's a narrow-minded way to look at it, but I just felt like I was surrounded by these amazing, amazing painters who could just paint, and like I clearly could not do that at all. And so I guess I kind of just like gave up on it.
Well, that's very cool though, how quickly you found the right thing.
Yeah. I mean, and I dabbled a lot in college. Like I did sculpture a lot, and for a while I wasn't sure if I was going to do sculpture or fibers. And I went back and forth on that. But then I took photography. Like I kind of did a lot of everything. But fibers, yeah, was my major. So.
And then by the last year, did you have to fully major in one? Like, did you just do fibers, or in fourth year could you still dabble around?
I think I still managed to dabble, probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember what mine was like, because I was a painting major. Same thing. I think so many people go to art school and you just assume you're supposed to be a painter.
Yes.
And I found photography in my last semester of my last year, and I loved it. And I loved being in the dark room, I think, because I could hide out. And I just was like, oh my gosh, I just wasted. Like, I wish I'd found it first year, then that would have been my thing, I think, for the whole time. But yeah. Anyway, that's why dabbling is so good, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So let's go backwards, because I do know one story about you, which I couldn't believe when I started looking into you before you were in the book and stuff, about everything that you went through when you were, was it 12?
Yeah, basically started when I was about 12. Well, you want me to tell the story?
Yeah, I'm going to let you go, because I kind of know it, but I'm sure you know it a whole lot better than I do.
Okay.
If you're comfortable telling the story.
No, I'm comfortable telling the story. So when I was 12, basically, I developed a spinal disease. And, you know, what happens with it is instead of, like, when you hit puberty and when you hit your growth spurts, instead of growing like a normal spine, your spine basically deteriorates and breaks down, and you grow, in my case, a hunchback. And it all happened very quickly. That I went from like normal and healthy to very not normal and very not healthy. So,
God, that must have been terrifying.
I don't know. I don't think I ever was terrified. I don't think I ever had like room to, like I was when I was older, but when it was first happening, it was just kind of like, here's this thing that you have to deal with, and here's the steps you have to take to deal with it. And, like when I had my first surgery and I was going into it, which is jumping ahead of the story, but like I wasn't afraid at all because I'd never had a surgery and I didn't know what that meant or like what recovery would be like. But then when I had surgeries after the first surgery, that's when I was terrified.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so go back. So,
going back.
Sorry, I keep interrupting you. Go ahead.
No, you can interrupt as much as you want. So I like had a lot of treatments, tried a lot of different things to basically stop my back from continuing to curve. And, with everything that I went through with it, it was always like 3% of the people need this excessive treatment beyond what's normal. And I was always that 3% basically with everything. So, I wore a back brace for all of freshman year in high school, which was, like the worst experience you could humanly imagine. Mm-hmm. And that didn't work. And then I did like physical therapy and a whole bunch of stuff. And then, so basically ended up having to have surgery, when I was a sophomore in high school. And, it was a 16-hour surgery.
Oh my gosh.
With two teams of surgeons, and it was like two surgeries in one, from two different parts of my bodies, and so it was intense, and it was a really long recovery. And I should say, like, leading up to that, I was in pain all the time, and I basically couldn't function like a normal human should. Mm-hmm. And so the goal wasn't to like fix my spine, it was to like keep me from curving more, and also to help with the pain issues. So in the 16-hour surgery, they magically fixed me, and it wasn't even the goal to fix me.
Wow.
I came out with a straight spine, and I grew 2.5 inches during the surgery. I didn't actually grow, but they straightened me 2.5 inches.
Oh my gosh.
So I remember like standing up the first time, and I like looked down at my mom, who was then a lot shorter than me, but going in for the same height, you know?
Oh my gosh. And then did you have to have, so how many other surgeries did you have to have after that?
I've had two since that one.
Okay.
And both of those weren't that bad of, I mean, they were like, I don't know, like normal surgeries that take like short amounts of time and you recover easy from.
Oh my goodness. And so, and can I ask, so now, does it bother you at all, or are you totally, this is just behind you now?
I wish.
Oh.
No, it's, it's a work in progress, and every year, I tend to look at it in years, like if it's a good year or a bad year, every year is different. And I definitely had, like, stretches of, like, 2 or 3 years where nothing happened, and it was great, so. It's just something I deal with, and,
yeah,
Well,
I remember reading about you years ago and read about this and was just like, whoa, you know, it's just so much, especially that age, my gosh, like, mm-hmm. just to go through all of that. And then, and that you were, I totally under, like, the pain that you must have been in. And then your work is so meticulous. And I thought, God, how could she, you know, when you're in pain like that, were you using the art to kind of, as your own therapy?
Definitely. That's like, and you know, that's definitely how it started. And, you know, when I say I found the art room in high school, like, I was really, really bullied yeah. because of probably looking different or being different or a combination of everything. And so when I found the art room, it was like, oh, this place where people aren't going to throw food at my head.
Oh my God. Kids suck.
Kids suck.
Oh.
But so that's, you know, so that's when I really, really got into art, was when I was recovering from my first surgery. And I definitely was using it as a tool for, I don't know, self-therapy or self-healing
mm-hmm.
for sure. I used to just like lock myself in my bedroom and do like nude self-portrait paintings in high school for hours. And, I don't know if that's a weird thing to say, but.
No, nope. Everybody that's listening are artists. Like, everybody gets it.
Yeah. So, you know, and there was a lot of like looking at my body and dealing with my body and making art and recovering.
Mm-hmm. And then when you started doing, like the crochet work that I first found, mm-hmm. I don't even know what year that would have been. 2009. When were you doing the big, like the pelts and stuff?
That was sort of, I don't know, I want to say around like 2005 or something.
Yeah. And so were you still dealing with pain quite a bit then?
Oh, that's when I had my last surgery, actually. Okay. When I was like 25, I had the last one. And, you know, a lot of it was I was in a lot of pain and I could like sit up in bed and crochet for hours if I needed to.
And that didn't bother you? Like the, were you weren't in pain sitting up or you were?
I mean, then I was like in horrible pain no matter what I did. So it was like better to be busy and to use my hands and like do something rather right. than just sit there and feel awful and sorry for myself and not, and like, you know, I don't know what I would have done, watch TV or something.
Right, right. So. And yeah, because those pieces, they're so organic and so beautiful. And then I read about all this stuff and that, you know, these pieces that are beautiful and have beads and pinks and reds were actually like diseased cells and, you know, you responding to this, the hump and all the things that were going on with you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. That's just so amazing because like what a proactive, like what a wonderful way to deal with it instead of watching Dr. Phil all day.
Yeah. You know, I probably did that at the same time.
Yeah, that's right. And so when you're working on those things, because I mean, that is pretty heavy, everything that you were going through.
Yeah.
Pretty heavy. So when you were working on stuff, do you just kind of zone out? Like even now, do you just sort of zone out or are you thinking the whole time about what it is that you're making? Or is it so just sort of methodical and repetitive that you can almost meditate in a way?
I would say that like 80% of it is zoning out and is meditative.
Because your hands must just do it.
Yeah. I mean, there are parts where I'm making decisions and that part isn't meditative. I mean, that's yeah. like anybody making a decision or doing a drawing or picking out colors. Like those parts aren't. But mm-hmm. if I'm doing it right and I'm like in my happy place, then I'm totally zoned out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so great. And so I actually know, so that was when I first found you, wrote about all of those, and then embroidery on paper showed up.
Yes.
And you were still sort of doing big lumps and mounds of things. Was that still about all, you know, the back and everything, or was it morphing into something else?
You know, I think when I started doing the paper embroidery that everything changed in a very dramatic, I don't want to say dramatic, in a dramatic way. And then I stopped. Well, before that, everything was sort of imagery based, like you're saying, like I was always thinking about like imagining a disease and I'm crocheting that disease or something like that, or mold or
mm-hmm.
blood cells or something. And then after that, I feel like it just all got really abstract.
Mm-hmm.
And less specific, and like the ideas just became more general.
Mm-hmm.
I
wonder if that's because you were like feeling like you were sort of out of those, your surgeries had passed and mm-hmm. you were changing.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
How did you feel going for, like, cause I mean, I love all, I mean, you know, I'm a big fan, whoop, whoop. And I love everything that you make, but, what did it feel like going from doing like the wall hanging crochet stuff and the objects, the crocheted objects and stuff to like, what was the day that you were like, I'm going to embroider on paper?
Well, I should say when I was making crocheted everything and embroidered objects as well, I was always super frustrated and I kind of like, I always hated it a little. I was always trying to figure out, what's the next thing I can do different so that I like this process more or that I like the product more?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. So, well, then another issue, well, there's too many issues.
Go ahead.
One, crocheting takes forever. So it would take like 6 months to make something and that drove me crazy.
Mm.
Also,
that would drive me crazy too.
Like I live in Brooklyn and people in Brooklyn have tiny apartments with not a lot of space. And I have boxes and boxes and boxes of stuff that I made that still lives with me. And every time I move it. And it's like, so that was one of the aspects. And then another aspect was I started to think about art that people live with, in their homes. And like the art that I lived with in my home, that's not my own art, that's other people's art that I like to look at. And I started imagining like wanting to make work that I would want to own, basically. Mm-hmm. And another aspect, sorry, there's a lot. Another aspect of it.
It's a list. I love lists.
Yeah, it's a list. I was always taking photos of the crocheted pieces, and I always like close-up photos, and I always liked the close-up photo more than the actual object.
Wow, so that's interesting.
Thinking a lot of what I've done with the embroideries is like thinking about photos I'm taking. So whether when I started, it would be like photos of crocheted stuff, and now I take close-up photos of everything I embroider, and I almost feel like each thing is like a close-up of the thing before, sort of.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually looking at a close-up of one of your pieces right now, and love it. That sort of rainbowy, that's totally wrong. Not a rainbow, but that really colorful mound that it's like made of little flowers or little starbursts almost.
Oh, yes.
It's in creative block. And so there's a picture of the full piece, and then over on the side is the close-up of it. And I could literally just look at that all day. It's so beautiful.
Thanks.
See, there's the Emily Barletta fan club coming through again. and so are you doing any crochet anymore, or is it all – it seems like it's all embroidery now.
It's all embroidery. When I started embroidering on paper, I started making a blanket. So I spent about 5 years, like whenever I get frustrated or creative or get blocked with the embroidering, I would like go and do a few rows in my blanket, which is now finished. And I probably should start a new blanket.
What a good idea. It's like the block blanket.
No, definitely. Yeah. It's all over my Instagram. If you look at, you'll see the blanket that I'm talking
about. Okay. Is it huge?
It's like the size of my bed. I think I made it to fit my bed. It's like queen.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That would take me 12 years. I have really bad arthritis in my hands. So I look at your work and I'm like, nope, could not do that. although, you know, with your whole theory of like, you know, using it to get through the pain, I was like, well, I could try that. I just did a piece with embroidery on it and it just about killed me. And it was the simplest embroidery. And I, you know, thinking about talking to you today, I was just like, gosh, it made me want to take an Advil. I was just like, oh, you know, so well, I don't know how you do it.
That was one of the big reasons why I had to stop crocheting. My hands were sore like all the time.
So yeah, you know, that's so interesting. Like I used to do these little house drawing things, but they were so labor intensive. They had so many steps and at any point I could wreck everything I had done thus far. Mm-hmm. And every time I worked on them, my shoulders would get really, really tight and I'd get really
hunched forward.
Yeah. And I'd be so stressed and I was like, well, this isn't fun. Like I didn't enjoy it at all. And so I can totally see what you mean. Like just how do you keep making, but make something that you actually enjoy making so that, you know, it shouldn't be a painful process. And so the first embroidery on paper, were you like, oh yeah.
Yeah. It was like the light bulb moment where the light bulb goes on over your head and you're like, I figured it out. Oh my God.
What made you try? Like what made you try that?
Gosh, I don't even remember.
Yeah.
I wanted to, like, one of my issues with, the crocheting was that I always wanted something to be, like, sturdy and flat.
Mm.
And I was always using, a much smaller crochet hook than I was supposed to use for the thread to make the stitches, like, tighter and tighter and tighter, to try and, like, make it more solid.
Mm-hmm.
So the paper... Well, and before paper, I should say, I tried embroidering on canvas that was stretched like a painting.
Okay.
And I hated that because of basically for the amount of space it took up. I didn't like that everything was taking up so much space.
Yeah.
So I just was like, let me try something flat that I can just put in a pile and like stick under my bed.
Thank you, Brooklyn. I know that does make a big difference. I did the same thing. I had stacks and stacks of canvas, and I remember walking into my studio just thinking, what a colossal waste of space.
Yeah.
And especially if it doesn't go the way you want it to.
Yes.
You've kind of wrecked a piece, you know, like a more expensive material. And so does that give you a bit of freedom, the fact that you're just using paper?
Definitely, yes.
Yeah. And I actually asked you that in Creative Block, how you, because, you know, they're so meticulous, and like, how do you feel if you quote unquote, you know, make a mistake? And you said that with the embroidery, it was much more forgiving because you can pull it all out and go again.
Yep. And I do that a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I'll have something that if you saw it, you would basically think it was finished, and I'll rip out the entire thing and then reuse all the holes.
Oh my God. I'd just be like, stop! That is kind of cool, though, that the holes remain. You must use a really heavy weight of paper to pull that off.
Yeah, it's watercolor paper. I think it's 160 pounds. So it's pretty, it's not like the thickest it comes, but it's
right.
Pretty thick.
And I happen to know firsthand because I have one in my house. I cried when that came.
Oh.
I had no idea what I could possibly be getting from you when that got there. And I opened it up and I was just like, it is gorgeous. I can't even imagine, like, there's so much thread on there. And I just think, like, for me, that would just take forever. And it's so beautifully done. Anyway, it's got
to... Well, and you got to look at the back, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The back is great. And kind of crazy, but I love it.
Yeah.
So thank you. I don't know if I ever, I mean, I'm sure I emailed you 5,000 times, but I never got to say, you know, in person, thank you so much. Like, it is literally one of my prized possessions. And I just am so, I was so overwhelmed to actually have a real one in my house. And I pointed out to everybody that comes over. So I'll put it in the post so that everybody can see what I have. Oh, and did you just, I saw your little shop section on your site.
Yes.
Is there a pin that looks like it?
You know, it does look similar to that. Yeah, I made a pin recently because I like the idea of art being more accessible, or like if you want to own something from an artist you like, for that to be accessible to everyone and not just like only really rich people.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it's based off of like the zigzags that I was doing when I did yours.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved it. I was thinking exactly that, like how nice that people can have that because, you know, yeah. It can get expensive, and, you know, rightly so. Your work should be expensive. You should not be giving that away, but it's very cool that you can, you know, make smaller sizes or, actually, do you do commissions or no?
Yeah, I'm open to the idea, for sure.
Have you ever? I just set you out for something that you're like,
No, you know, the honest answer, which I probably shouldn't say, but whatever, is that I get asked about doing commissions, like, all of the time, and then for some reason none of them have ever gone through.
Oh.
And I don't know if it's me turning people off in the process of trying to like coordinate the whole thing. I have no idea why it's never worked out, because people ask me like all the time.
That's so weird.
It's really weird.
Maybe you're not supposed to do them. Maybe it would be like that illustration class where you're given a brief and you're like, I don't want it. Don't tell me what to do.
Well, no, and every time someone asks me to do one, I'm like, I should do it because it's money. And then yeah. I'm like cringing as I'm like writing the, yes, of course. But
yeah.
I'm like, oh God, no, no.
Well, there's your answer.
Yep.
I've got this whole new thing now. I turned 40 a couple of years ago, and everybody told me, all my friends that were already over 40, they're like, just wait. It's so great. You say no to way more stuff. And I was just like, I'm such a people pleaser, yes man. And I was like, I don't think that's going to happen to me. It was like overnight. I turned 40. Nope. No thanks. No. Man, it's freeing. And so, yeah, when you have that moment of the cringe of, and I get that sometimes, but now I just say, no, I'm not going to do that.
I should do that more often.
Yeah, it's way better. Way better. Okay, I also wanted to ask you, so many, well, your embroidery pieces, are they all untitled?
Yes.
Why?
They're
numbered. Is that so that you can stack them in a numbered pile in your Brooklyn apartment, and then they're flat and organized by number?
I mean, basically, it did sort of lend itself to that way of organizing things, and but also, there's a lot of answers to that question.
Good.
I didn't want to be precious about titling things anymore, and I felt like. I almost feel like I don't have a right to name something.
Mm.
I don't know. Like it shouldn't have a name, and I shouldn't give it a name. It should just exist as what it is. And I just got sick of doing it. So I just stopped basically.
I love it. There you go. No, I don't want to title it.
And you can't make me. That's actually really cool. I know there's, it's, there is something very nice in just letting the viewer decide what it is to them, you know, and when they're and but I love that they were numbered because I'm very organized. And I was like, oh, look, I can trace back to number one. Are you super organized?
Yes, sort of. I'm not a tidy person, but I'm super organized.
You kind of have to be with all your stuff.
Yeah.
God, you must have reams of thread.
The bin, really, but yeah.
Is it messy?
Yes.
I have this jar of embroidery thread, and it's all like, I could pick it up in one ball now. It's so messy. I really should organize that. But is yours like actually like by color, or is it just all together?
It's just all together, yeah. It's not organized.
Oh, that actually makes me feel a little bit better about myself. I thought it would yours would be super organized.
No, it's like a Tupperware tub with the lid that goes on, so I don't have to deal with it. I just like jam the lid on.
Well, I have a question in the speed round for you about that, but I'll get to that later. Okay. So when you go into an embroidery thread shop, do you just go cuckoo with buying colors, or do you have a plan?
Oh, there is a plan.
Oh, there's a plan.
The plan is I buy colors I don't like.
Really?
Yes. Like if I like a color, I'm probably not allowed to touch it.
Why?
Because
then it'll be too go-to?
Well, I've noticed that in the past when, so this is a new system that's been in place for like a year now, but in the past when I was buying the colors I liked, I would reach in, I would like open my bin and it would be all, it would look like 200 things of the same color, of like maybe the same five colors, even though they might be a little bit different. I just kept buying all the same colors and I'd be like, oh, I need a color that's like a little bit, that's going to stand out against, like I'm still using my favorite colors, but I feel like I have a lot more use for ugly colors that I don't like than I do for colors I like.
I like that.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
I should try and do that because my I've got my like four go-to colors that I love, and then but you know, I hate yellow. And so the other day I was like, I'm going to force myself to use yellow. I hated everything I made. I was like, yep, I still hate yellow.
I hate purple, but now I use a lot of it, I think.
Really? Yeah, I don't like purple either. Well, it depends on the purple. But I could stand in front of a wall of embroidery thread. It's like a giant rainbow. It's just like so exciting to me, all the possibilities that are there.
Yep.
And so when you're planning a piece, do you actually, do you draw it first? Like, do you have a sketch ahead of time or do you let it flow?
You know, it tends to go either one way or the other, and I do both, but they're very separate, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you look at my portfolio or like my artwork, you would see that like some of them look kind of organic and I probably didn't draw those. And some of them look maybe more structured or patterned, and I probably drew those.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I looked at your recent work, and that's really like cool patterns and stuff within the little squares. That's quite new.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? Like just experimenting, and you landed there.
I was really trying to paint when I did those. I think I know the ones you're talking about, where there's like the white. Like the drawing that's over top is the negative space. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really trying to paint, but before I had been painting and it was just like, it ended up being a rectangle of just colors.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted there to be another layer of interest to it. So that's when I did the drawings, and then the drawings were the negative space. But with sort of the like color field painting idea behind it. And then I got really distracted and stopped. And I think I should have kept going with it. But it's like once it's over, it's sometimes you can't get it back.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that. you know what? Actually, one thing, it's kind of a weird segue, but what book did you say that was from? John Cage's Some Rules for Students and Teachers.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
You said that in Creative Block. And I love this so much. I'm going to read it.
Okay.
I was asking about your inner critic, and you said that, I guess it's a list in this book. And number 8 is, don't try to create and analyze at the same time. They're different processes. And you said, I struggle with this a great deal and try to remember this rule and stick to it. So this was 3 years ago that you wrote, that you did this interview. So do you find, like, is that still a thing for you? Like, can you analyze later after you're done? Like, is that when you pull the thread out and reuse the holes, or is that still a struggle?
I feel like it's not as much of a struggle now because I basically just have taught myself not to do those two things together. Like, I'm either making art or I'm looking at it and thinking about it, but I don't, I basically just don't allow myself to do the two things at the same time.
When I read that, I was like, that is so brilliant. And because that's a huge problem for most people. Like, that's the whole inner critic thing, right? Like, as if you're judging yourself while you're making.
Exactly.
You can't make.
You get stuck. You get so stuck.
Yeah. You're just frozen. And it's so fun if you can just let go. Like, I wonder, does the paper must give you that a little bit of that freedom too, as opposed to working on this giant crochet piece that is going to take you 6 months.
Oh, yeah, because I used to sometimes make something for 6 months and then get to that. Like, I would have worked on it for 6 months in the part where maybe I start putting it together, and I hate it, and it's garbage, but it was 6 months of garbage versus I might spend a week on an embroidered drawing and then decide it's garbage.
And I asked you that too, and you have no problem throwing things out.
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I think that's the other nice thing. Like, as soon as I switched from canvas to paper, I had no problem, like, getting rid of them, you know, as opposed to canvas just seems like such an object.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
yeah.
And it was so hard to, like, toss it or to, like, I don't know. And with paper, it's like, meh, and I either flip them over or whatever. And so it's a very freeing thing. So if you can kind of whittle your work down to a point where, yeah, you're free like that, that you can truly make while you're making. I love that answer in the book. So I really wanted to read that for everybody else that's listening, just because it's such an important thing to not allow yourself to do if you can.
Yeah.
And it's practice, I guess, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, like, usually if I'm working on something in, like, say in an evening, and I've been working on it for an hour, and I look at it and I'm like, oh, I hate this. This is garbage. I'm like, no, you're working on it. Just keep working on it. Hmm. And I basically make myself. And then the next day when I pick it up, that's when I decide, like, okay, it's time to rip out all these stitches, or no, it's okay, I'll continue on.
Yeah, the clarity of the morning.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, are you ready for the speed round? I was thinking today, I need to rename this because it's never speedy.
It isn't.
No, it should be called, like, the get to know you round, or, like, the weird question round. I have to rebrand this because speed round does not work.
Okay.
For me, I am not speedy. So this is the get to know you round. Ready?
Yes.
What is your favorite thing to do on the weekend? Embroider on paper.
I was going to say either go hiking or go to the dog park, one or the other.
Oh, do you have dogs?
I have two tiny dogs, yes.
What are they?
They're both rescues, and they're both like some sort of Chihuahua mutt.
Oh, mix. That's so cute. I have two miniature wiener dogs.
Oh.
They are trouble. Yeah, they might be. Or one of them would attack. Anyway. That's a whole other thing. Okay, this is from my son. If you had to eat only one thing for the rest of your life, what would that one thing be?
Okay, wait, I discuss this all the time with my boyfriend. But can it be, does it have to be like, an ingredient or like a whole meal?
Because
I would say potatoes, but like I could get more specific with how the potatoes have to be cooked or not.
Right. Well, okay. Because then that gives you the option to do potato many ways. Is that what
exactly.
You're saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's brilliant. I could literally eat potato every day too. My son said burgers. He goes, if you just say burger, he goes, then you could have like turkey burger, veggie burger. You know, he's like, then you get cheeseburger. Oh. He's like, so he was stretching the rules there, but I'd go with potato for sure.
Although usually when I play it, it's if you were stuck on an island and you can only have three foods, we usually do three, but yeah.
And what are your three? Potatoes.
Potatoes is kind of maybe cheese. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say cheese.
It's hard to say. It's hard to pick a third.
But if you're on a really hot island, potato and cheese might not be appetizing. You might need some watermelon in there or something. Mine would be chips, which is potato.
Yep.
I could eat chips every day. I wish they were good for you, you know, and be like, oh, I haven't had my chips today. I better have some dip too, just to make sure that I'm taking care of myself.
I always say that if they had like AA for potato chips, that I would have to go because it's a problem.
We could sit beside each other. It is seriously a problem. Like I cannot have one.
No. Ugh. And then they give you buy the little bag and it'll say 2 servings and you're like, so I'm only supposed to eat half of this little bag? Nobody does that. Nobody eats half the bag and puts the rest in the cupboard.
Well, you might for like 30 seconds and then you know they're in there and you've got to go get them.
Exactly.
I love them so much. My husband got me for Christmas. We'd already sort of, you know, you're married for however long. It's like, don't get me anything. So he was like, what do you want for Christmas this year? And I said, literally, if you fill a stocking with chips and dip, like, I'm good. And that's what he did. I've never been happier on Christmas morning. I could just see these bags of the chips sticking out of the top of the stocking. And I was so happy.
Well, what kind of dip?
Well, I'm Canadian. Uh-huh. So there's Nally's bacon and onion dip. I love with plain ripple chips. Also, big fan of dill pickle dip.
I don't think I've ever had that.
I'll See, that's, into it. That's why I had to throw out the I'm Canadian thing, because we have different weird flavors.
Yeah.
What's your favorite? What's your go-to chip?
Probably just plain.
Mm-hmm. Ripple?
Either way.
Yeah.
No huge preference.
Okay. I like fake cheese-flavored things.
I do. I like fake cheese a lot. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're back to the potatoes and cheese. We will have to sit together at that AA meeting, I think. And we'll just sneak chips in together. Oh, yeah. Wow, I can't believe how long we just talked about chips. Okay.
You can get that out later.
No, I'm keeping it in. I think it's important to, you know, face these things about yourself and embrace them. Uh-huh. Have a problem. Okay. Now, don't answer this right away because I want to guess.
Okay.
Favorite color? Is it red?
Well, that's obvious. Yes.
Well, then, see, you threw me off because when you were like, oh, then I try to use colors that I don't love. And I was like, uh-oh.
No. But,
yeah, you love red.
Yeah.
And pink?
Yeah. Anything lipstick colored.
Yeah. Why is that, do you think? You just do.
Yeah, I mean, early on, like, I was looking at it as, like, a body color or as a blood color and relating it to that, but I think I loved it beyond that or before that, so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
My grandmother was an Avon lady, and she had this little powder room in their house that they called the Avon room, because there wasn't even, a sink or toilet. It was basically, like, a cupboard, like a little closet that was just filled with all the makeup she hadn't sold.
Oh my God, I would have loved that.
And it was, and the room was painted pink.
Oh my God.
And it kind of smelled like that old powder, you know, that old lady perfume powdery stuff. And I would just go in there and just smell. And then she had all these mini lipsticks, like these tiny little sample lipsticks. And they were all those shades, like of your work, like reds and pinks and like dark red, light red, you know. And I could just sit in there for hours. You would have loved it.
I would have, if I was a kid, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nail polish and powder. Oh my gosh, I loved it. And their house still smelled like that even after they like renovated that and they turned it into a little blue bathroom. So sad. Where's the Avon room? Anyway, you would have appreciated it. Mm-hmm. Okay, final question. When you work, I think we already kind of hit on this, but when you work, do you prefer to listen to A, music, B, TV and or movies, C, silence?
TV. Realistically, yeah, or podcasts, but usually talking.
Hmm.
Some sort of talking.
And then this is I asked somebody else this and they said no, and then I felt like a crazy person. But do you ever have, like, so now that you're working on these smaller pieces, say you're watching a particular movie when you're doing one of these pieces. When you look at that piece later, does it remind you of that movie?
Not really.
See? Oh my God, okay, I am crazy. Like, if I'm watching Dirty Dancing and doing a piece, then every time I look at that piece later, it's all I can think of is Dirty Dancing.
But do you think the Dirty Dancing, like, references make it into... Because you're doing these sort of, like, narrative...
Yeah, no, they totally don't make it in there.
Okay.
But so I just see that. It. It just reminds me of it because... Or if, you know, Modern Family was... Like, whatever was on in the background, or if a podcast was on in the background, every time I look at that piece, that's all I can think about. And apparently I'm the only one in the world. I'm going to stop asking that question.
They do remind me of things that happened when I was making them, though, but just not on the TV.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe I have to go to, like, a TV help session as well, TV and chips.
I can join you with the TV one.
Okay.
As well.
Yeah. That wasn't one of my questions, but what's your favorite TV show then?
Like, of all time?
Let's go all time and currently.
True Blood, maybe. All time.
I haven't watched that.
Really? Oh, I love it.
That's what I've heard. And currently?
I'm not watching. What did I finish? You know, I watch so much TV when I'm working that I feel like it doesn't even register with me most of the time.
Yeah.
I just finished the most recent season of Grey's Anatomy. That's what I finished.
That's what Erin M. Riley, Riley on and she said that.
I just heard that because I was watching it, like, not as I was listening, but around the same time. And I was like, yeah, it's a terrible season. And I don't know why I'm still watching it, but I still put it on. It's been bad for several seasons.
Did you ever watch Lost?
Yes, I did Lost.
And were you, like, devout, like, into it, Lost?
Well, so what I like to do with the TV is to wait till it's completely finished and then watch it. Like, I don't want to watch something while, like, basically what I'm doing with Grey's Anatomy is I'm watching it every time they put out a season. But I waited till Lost was completely over to watch it so I could just, like, binge watch the whole thing.
Oh, smart. Yeah, we watched it on, like, Wednesdays or Sunday nights or whenever it was on. So, you know, it was only once a week.
I think that would have made me insane.
Yeah, it made me insane. And I've often said it was like an abusive relationship because you were like, just when you were like, you know what, I'm done. Like, what are you guys doing over there? They'd like bring you flowers and like offer you some, like they'd actually make something from season two make sense in season five. And you're like, oh, okay. It's all going to come back together, right? No. And then at the end, it's just like they just punched you in the face and broke up with you. And you were like, are you kidding me? We all knew by the second episode that it was purgatory, and you've wasted 6 years of my life.
Like, you couldn't have come up with a better ending.
Yeah, like,
How I felt when I watched 6 Feet Under. I felt like that was an abusive relationship TV show. I felt so, like, emotionally abused by it, and then I just kept watching it because it was so addictive.
I know, but that's the beauty of the binge.
Yeah.
You just go, it's done. If it wasn't right, you know, fine. I brought this up earlier too, but do you watch The Americans?
I haven't seen that. I know of it.
You need to.
Okay.
Hey, that's sure all I'll say. I went on and on about it in another episode, so I'm just going to stop right there, but it is
okay.
So good.
I've heard that.
I don't know. Okay.
But I don't like to watch shows that are too good because then they're distracting.
Right. You need to focus, and I can't. Yeah, if I tell you too many good shows, the art world will be like, what are you doing? You're slowing her down.
I have to watch kind of bad TV when I'm making art. Like, I wouldn't make art and watch True Blood at the same time.
They need to focus.
Don't go together. Yeah.
Right. Fair enough. Okay, so those are all my get-to-know-you round. But you know what I didn't ask you is, so what's going on with you now? Like, shows and stuff?
Not much. I mean, I'm trying to think. I have a show coming up in Florida somewhere in the very near future, next month. Mm-hmm.
Are you rep by a gallery or do you like arrange all that stuff yourself?
I do it all myself. Wow. I don't have a gallery.
Would you want to? I always ask artists this because some people are like, no, thanks. They'd rather do it on their own. Other people want one. Like, what do you like? Would you want one or no?
I think that if it was a good relationship, I would definitely want one. But mm-hmm. I don't want one just to have one with the gallery that's, like, not the right gallery.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I can't wait to see what you do next because every single time I go past your site, it's like, oh, my God, there she goes again. And it's just, I just love your work so, so much. And I'm so happy that we got to actually, like, chat for this long.
Yeah, me too.
And that wasn't bad at all, right?
No. Mm-mm.
God, imagine if we'd had chips.
Then we would have been like crunching.
Crunch. Yeah, that wouldn't have been very good. It would have been delicious, but it wouldn't have been very good for the listeners. Unless they had chips too, then they wouldn't have minded. But
could have put something in the beginning like, this is a chip episode.
Yeah.
Get your chips out.
That's right. I need to see, maybe Saatchi will let me also get a chip sponsor. Brought to you by Saatchi Art. And anyway, there's so many issues there. Okay, I'm going to let you go because I've had you on here for almost an hour.
Okay.
But thank you so, so much for telling your stories, and I can't wait to put this post together. It's such a good excuse to write about you again. And it'll be up next week.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Emily. I will talk to you soon.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay, so we said goodbye, but then yes, I did that thing where I kept recording. A lot of it's just Emily and I catching up, and I swear there was no more chip talk. But I really, really wanted to include this 1 minute clip about how Emily got through those difficult high school years. It's wonderful advice to any kid who might need it. Here we go.
Your work is just so, so beautiful and thoughtful and interesting and all this stuff. And then, which is great on its own, but then you hear like the story of like everything that you went through, and for you to come through all of it and be this person who's making these beautiful things, like you could have just, you know, given up.
Yeah.
And I admire you so much. And when I heard your story, and like, you know, I was so happy to meet you in New York, and I really wanted to share your story on here too. So.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I think, you know how you see the thing in the news and it's horrible to bring up, but where like kids are bullied and they kill themselves.
Yeah.
And there's just all these, it just happens so much. It's so horrible and so shocking. And, you know, I feel like when I see that, I feel like, oh, that could have been me, and not because I was suicidal, but because that was my experience. And the only way that like I basically, I want to say, got through it was that I started making art. And then I said, you know, like I set my goals on going to college and leaving the town that I grew up in. Like
right.
That was my goal. Like I'm going to, instead of being like, this is horrible, how can I survive this? I'm like, I'm going to graduate high school and I'm going to leave this town.
Yeah.
As soon as I can. Like, and that's what I did. And you know, and it gets better.
Yeah.
It gets better. Yes, it does. Emily is proof of that. A successful artist living in Brooklyn doing the kind of work she wants to do. Thank you so much to Emily for sharing all of her stories. And I'm so sorry about all of that chip talk. Clearly, I was hungry during this call. Thank you so much to Saatchi Art for supporting this episode. And of course, big thanks to you for listening. There will be more Art for Your Ear next weekend. See you then. Thank you.